Good morning, my dear friends. Today is July the 22nd. We are at the Assembly of Stars Meditation Hall in the Lower Hamlet during our summer opening. I think there is a book with the title The Art of Happiness, right? Written by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. That's right, The Art of Happiness. So you have to learn the art. You have to practice in order to be happy. Yeah, happiness is the fruit of our practice. And there is an art of making happiness. It seems that I have also written a book with titled The Art of Power. The Art of Power. We believe that if we have power, then happiness will be easier. Political power, other kind of power. When you have a lot of money, you have some power. But that does not mean that when you have power, you can be happy. In fact, you can be very unhappy with a lot of power. And you feel very often that you are powerless. That power that you have is not enough to help you to be happy, to do what you want to do. Think of President Barack Obama. He has a lot of power, but I feel that he feels very often powerless. He wants to do many things, but he does not have enough power. In the teaching of the Buddha, we also learn about power. And there are three kinds of powers talked about by the Buddha. The first power is the power to cut off. You know that what is there makes you suffer a lot. You are stuck to it, you are caught by it, and yet you have no power of cutting through, the power to cut off. You have no courage to cut off. And that is the kind of power that we can cultivate. Because if we cannot cut off, we continue to suffer. Our craving our anger, our frustration, our despair. So there are afflictions in us. We have to learn how to cut off. And the Buddha offers us instruments in order to cut off. Đoạn được. This is a spiritual power. Đoạn. To cut off. The power to cut off. When you are able to cut off, you become a free person. And happiness is possible only when you are free. So whatever is binding you, not allow you to be happy, to be free, have to cut off. And you need friends, you need a teacher, you need a sangha to support you so that you are, you'll be strong enough to cut it off and you are free. The second kind of power talk about Buddha is the power to love. To accept. To forgive. To embrace. You suffer because you cannot accept it. You cannot accept him or accept her as she is. You suffer because your love is small. Your love is not large enough to embrace him or her. One day the Buddha was holding a bowl of water. And his right, in his right hand, he has a handful of salt. He let the salt pour into the water. He stirred, and he said, "Dear friends, do you think that you can enjoy drinking this water? It's too salty." You can drink this water because it's too salty. Maybe if there's a few grains of salt, you might drink, but it's a handful of salt, so it's very salty, you cannot drink. But if you throw this handful of salt into the river, and that is not enough to make the river salty, and people continue to take the water from the river and drink. Why? Because the river is large. and a handful of salt is nothing. So when your heart is large, you don't suffer. When your heart is small as a peanut, you suffer a lot. So the practice how to enlarge your heart so that you become a river rather than a bowl of water. And this is possible. This is the teaching of Buddha on love, to make love as something without frontiers. L'amour sans frontières. And this is possible. The teaching of the Buddha on love is very deep. And we are given steps in order to practice, in order to enlarge our heart, until our heart is large enough. And when our heart is large enough, we don't suffer anymore. Because it can include everyone, not just one person. Your heart will include everyone. Even the criminal, even the terrorist, because you know that they suffer. And you are motivated by the desire to help the terrorist or the criminal. Because you can understand his or her suffering. He has become a terrorist, a criminal, because no one has helped him to live differently. He had not received enough love, understanding. He did not have a good path. So instead of punishing him, lock him up, kill him, you want to help him. And that is when your heart is large. You don't want to punish anymore, and you can accept. So the second kind of power is the power of love. And that is something you can cultivate. Love is something you can cultivate. The art of loving. You can learn from the Buddha. The Buddha is a great lover. He doesn't exclude anyone, anything. His love embraces everyone, everything. Animals, vegetables, minerals. So with that power of love, you don't suffer anymore. And that is why we have to learn to cultivate that power, the power to love. And the third power talked about by Buddha is the power to understand. Understanding is the foundation of love. When you do not understand the suffering of someone, you cannot love him or her. So listening, looking deeply into the suffering of someone, you come to understand it. And when you have understood, love spring up as a source of nectar that can heal you, that can heal him or her. The understanding is the foundation of love. If a father does not understand, does not see the difficulties and the suffering of his son, he cannot accept and love his son. So the father has to come to the son and say, "My son, I know you have a lot of suffering and difficulties, I want to understand. Please tell me. I'm ready to listen. And if the father speaks like that, the son will be able to tell his father about his difficulties, his suffering. And then communication between the two will be possible, and the father will be able to love his son properly. Maybe the father has a lot of willingness to love. The father wants to love, but because he doesn't understand his son, the more he tries to love, the more he makes his son suffer. So the willingness, the will to love, is not love yet. The capacity to love lies in the capacity of understanding. So understanding suffering is crucial for love. The first noble truth offered by the Buddha is ill being suffering. And the second noble truth is understanding of the roots of suffering. So the teaching is very practical. You recognize the suffering. You look deeply into the heart of suffering, and you find out the causes, the roots of that suffering, and you begin to understand. As you have understood, you don't suffer anymore. You have compassion to accept, to help. The first and the second noble truth. And the fourth noble truth is how to do it, the path leading to the cessation of suffering, to the beginning of happiness. This morning you have learned that in order to understand someone's suffering, we have to understand our own suffering first. There's suffering inside. And if we know how to go home to ourselves and touch and listen to suffering inside, well, we have a chance to understand, to see the roots of our suffering. That understanding is crucial. It allowed compassion to arise and to heal. And that is why love, as the Buddha presented, begins with yourself. You understand yourself. You accept yourself. You make peace with yourself before you can do that for the other person. Meditation is an attempt to understand. You use the energy of mindfulness generated by breathing, walking, sitting, and you recognize what is there. What is there may be suffering, among other things. And as your mindfulness is powerful, concentration is born. And with mindfulness and concentration, you will come to understand the nature of what is there, including your suffering. So understanding is the fruit of the practice of mindfulness and concentration. mindfulness, niệm, is the first source of energy. Concentration is the second source of energy born from mindfulness. And when your mindfulness and concentration is powerful, you can break through and you get insight, you get understanding, which is a liberating factor. And this is the third kind of power, prajna. There are many kinds of practice on concentration proposed by the Buddha, like the three doors of liberation, emptiness, signlessness, aimlessness. These kind, three kinds of concentration, samadhi, can be found in every school of Buddhism. And practicing these concentrations, we break through and we get the insight that will be liberating. And that is the culture, the cultivation of understanding, of wisdom, of insight. And this is a power, a real power. Because with the sort of understanding, you can cut off all afflictions and all misunderstanding, or illusion, delusion. So this is a powerful kind of of practice. The Bodhisattva Manjushri symbolize that kind of power. He has a sword. He can cut off every kind of afflictions and ignorance. We need the sword of Manjushri. So when we come to the Buddha, we should have a chance to learn as how to cultivate these kind of powers. And these kind of powers never make you suffer, like money, fame, and political power. You cannot misuse them because they are spiritual powers that can be cultivated by any one of us. If business leaders, political leaders know how to cultivate these powers, they will suffer less and they will make good use of the other kind of power. Otherwise, the other kind of power will make them suffer. Money, fame, sex, things like that can be very destructive. I would like to invite you to help me to write another book, The Power of Suffering. If there is an art of happiness, there must be an art of suffering. There are ways to suffer. And I like to show my friends how to suffer. Because I have practiced that art. In the teaching of the Buddha, happiness and suffering, they go together. Without one, the other cannot be. You cannot hope to have only happiness. You cannot hope to ban suffering forever. Because these two always together, go together. It's like the above and the below. Where there is the above, the below is there. You cannot ban the below and hope that only the above exists. It's very clear. Suffering and happiness. Suffering and happiness. Like left and right. Wherever the left is, the right is also. You cannot ban either the left or the right and keep just one of them. This is impossible. In Plum Village we have lotus ponds, and you know that where there is a lotus flower, there is mud. You cannot hope to retain only the lotus and ban the mud. You cannot grow lotus on marble. Looking deeply into the lotus, you see the mud inside. If you remove the mud, there is no lotus left. And this is something taught by the Buddha. You should be realistic. Think of the kingdom of God. You may have the idea that the kingdom of God is a place where there is no suffering at all, only happiness. How can it be possible? How can you have lotus flower without the mud? In the Buddha's teaching, we learn that everything inter-ease with everything else. This wonderful flower. I see it as belonging to the kingdom of God. And when I touch the flower, I touch the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God for me is not an idea, abstract idea. It's not something in the future. It's somewhere you get in after you die. No, the kingdom is now. Or never. So this flower, to me, belongs to the kingdom of God. And if you know how to get in touch with it, you get in touch with the kingdom of God in the here and the now. And you yourself, with your body, you also belong to the kingdom. You are a wonder. Your body is also a wonder. You cannot despise your body. You should not hate your body, because that is something belonging to the kingdom of God. Enjoy the kingdom inside. Enjoy the kingdom outside. This flower is made of non-flower elements. Everything in the cosmos have come together to have this flower manifest. Look at the sunshine. Touch the sunshine. The sunshine is inside. We know that if there were no sunshine, no flower can grow. So the sunshine is it. And sunshine is a non-flower element that is crucial for the flower. And then there is a cloud inside. Without the cloud, there is no rain and no flower can grow. So there is a cloud thing inside. And that is what you see with your mind as a practitioner of meditation. You can see things that people don't see. You see a cloud floating in. You see the sunshine in. You see the earth. You see the minerals. You see the gardener. You see time, space, consciousness. You see the kingdom inside. So a flower is made only of non-flower elements. A flower cannot be there by herself alone. She has to interbe with non-flower elements like sunshine, cloud. She has no separate existence. She has no separate self. Her nature is no self. She is there as a flower made of only of non-flower elements. She inter-ees with everything else in the cosmos. That is the teaching of the Buddha, helping us to come to great understanding, insight, enlightenment. Happiness, your happiness is a flower. And it is made of non-happiness elements. In the morning, you drink some coffee or tea, and you need a piece of sugar. Sugar is sweet. It helps the coffee . But when you put the piece of sugar into water, it begins to disintegrate very quickly, and very soon you have molecule of sugar, very tiny molecule of sugar. And if you analyze that molecule of sugar, you see that sugar is made of non-sugar elements. There are atoms of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen. Only three kinds of chemical substance: carbon, hydrogen, oxygen. And carbon is a non-sugar element. Without carbon, you cannot have sugar. This morning you don't have sugar. But if I come and offer you a piece of charcoal to put in your coffee, you will refuse. Even if you know that charcoal is part of sugar. So sugar is made of no sugar elements, it's very clear. Your happiness is made of non-happiness elements, including suffering. Like the lotus is made of non-lotus elements, including mud. So if you want happiness, you cannot ban suffering. Suffering is a constituent that makes up your happiness. Suppose you have been hungry for several days, and now you have a bowl of rice to eat. And happiness, the happiness of having something to eat, comes from the fact that you know that having something to eat is happiness, because you know already what is the suffering of not having anything to eat. When you serve your food at lunch time, be mindful. And the Buddha tell you how to do it. While serving, you are truly there in the here and the now. And you know that my plate is empty, but in just a few seconds, it will be filled of good things to eat. And at the same time, there are children in the world are holding their broken plate and wait and wait and wait for many days, like in Ethiopia. And nothing is seen in the plate. And when you see that, you feel that you are very lucky. So happiness comes from that kind of awareness. Happiness is made of non-happiness elements. When you come home and you say, home, sit home, you are happy. Because you have been away from home. You suffer because somehow, because you did not have the comfort of home. So if you feel happy, it means that the happiness has become one of the elements of your happiness. So happiness and suffering, they always to go together. You cannot ban suffering and keep happiness alone. This is not realistic. And we have learned enough this morning in order to know that there is happiness in the kingdom of God. But if happiness is there, the non-happiness element must be there. Otherwise, happiness cannot be possible. If carbon, oxygen, hydrogen is not there, you have no sugar. My definition of the kingdom of God is a place where is understanding and love that make happiness. Happiness is made of understanding and of love. Imagine a place where there is no mutual understanding, no love. How could you be happy in such a place? So it's very safe to say that the kingdom of God is a place where there is a great deal of understanding and love. But which kind of ingredients that you can fabricate understanding and love? We have already learned by getting in touch with the suffering. Listen to understand the suffering, and love will be born. Understanding is born and love is born. So understanding and love is born from suffering. It's very clear. And if you ban suffering from the kingdom of God, you ban also happiness, understanding, and love. So the kingdom of God is a place where people know how to make good use of suffering in order to fabricate understanding and love. They do not allow themselves to be drowned in the suffering. They know how to make good use of the mud in order to grow lotus flower. And with that kind of insight, you are no longer afraid of suffering. You say, hello, good morning, my little suffering. I know you are there. I will take care of you. I will make good use of you in order to create happiness for myself and others. You are not afraid. That is why there is an art of handling suffering. And that is why I have invited you to join me and write the new book, How to Handle Suffering. How to cultivate the art of suffering. Because if you know how to suffer, you also know how to create happiness. These two things are just one. If you are an organic gardener, you have the kind of understanding that others do not have. You know how to handle the garbage. A garden also always produces garbage. And you don't throw away the garbage, you keep them because you know how to transform garbage into compost to nourish the flowers. So suffering is the kind of garbage. You don't have to throw them away. You have to keep them. There is an art of using suffering in order to make happiness. If you have suffered, that is good. You may like to use the amount of suffering, that amount of suffering, in order to create happiness. That is an art. And if you don't know how, you don't know about the art of suffering, you don't know how the art of happiness either. In the Sutra of Mindful Breathing, the Buddha proposed 16 exercises of mindful breathing. And these 16 exercises embrace both suffering and happiness. And you can find, we can find ways in order to handle happiness and to handle suffering. It's very clear. In the last 2 weeks, we have learned these exercises. And I would like to repeat it a little bit briefly for you. The first exercise of mindful breathing is to recognize your in-breath and out-breath. Breathing in, this is my in-breath. And in-breath is going up. And you might like to enjoy your in-breath also. Breathing out, I know this is an out-breath. And I enjoy breathing out. That's the first exercise. To identify your in-breath and your out-breath, and to enjoy your in-breath and out-breath. It's pleasant. The second exercise is to follow your in-breath and your out-breath all the way through. No interruption. Mindfulness is not disrupted during the whole time of breathing in, breathing out. That way, mindfulness is creating concentration. You are concentrated only in your in-breath and our breath. You don't think of anything else. Completely focus. The second exercise is to follow your in-breath and out-breath all the way through without interruption. And you enjoy following your in-breath. And get the insight that you are alive. It's a wonderful to be alive and to be breathing in and breathing out. So the practice can be very pleasant. The third exercise, breathing in, I'm aware of my body, my whole body. I recognize my body. Breathing in, I bring my mind home to my body. And when your mind and your body are together, you are truly there in the here and the now to live your life. Because in our daily life, very often our body is there, our mind is elsewhere. Caught in our regret, our fear, and so on. And if you do well, you can get the insight that your body also belongs to the Pure Land of the Buddha, to the Kingdom of God. And you should take good care of it. This body has been given to you, and you have to take good care of it. By your way of eating, drinking, walking, sitting, working, and so on. And mind and body manifest together. Without the body, mind cannot manifest. Without the mind, body cannot be a real body, a living body. So breathing in, I recognize the presence of my body. Hello body, I know you are there. I'm breathing in, and I know you are there. And as we are back to our body, we notice that there is some tension, some pain in our body. We have worked our body a little bit too hard. It's not nice. So we should do something in order to help our body to feel better. And that is why the fourth exercise is to release the tension in the body. This is proposed by the Buddha. Breathing in, I release the tension from my body. I relax my body. Whether you are in a sitting position, or lying position, or walking position, you allow the tension to be released. The art of breathing, the art of taking care of your body, the art of releasing tension and reduce the pain. So in the four exercises, we already touch happiness and suffering. We learn to handle happiness and suffering. And with the fifth exercise, we move to the domain of feelings. Breathing in, I recognize a feeling of joy. Breathing out, I recognize the feeling of joy. The sixth is to recognize the feeling of happiness. Breathing in, I recognize the feeling of happiness. As a practitioner of meditation, we should be able to generate a feeling of joy whenever we want. we should be able to generate the feeling of happiness whenever you want. And how? It's very clear. The practice of mindfulness. When you breathe in mindfully, when you make steps mindfully, you bring your mind back to your body, you become fully present in the here and the now. You are not distracted anymore. You are not caught by the past, by the future, by your projects anymore. You are really there. And as you are there, you can get in touch with the kingdom of God. You can get in touch with your body and all the wonders of life that are there inside of you and around you. You cannot say that they are not there. If you are really in the here and the now, you must recognize all the wonders of life that are available. That sunshine, that tree, that bird, that little child, the grass, the children, they all are wonders. And your body is also a wonder. Your eyes is a wonder. Your tongue is a wonder. Your hand is a wonder. And you get in touch with many wonders, many conditions of happiness that are there. So happiness, joy become possible. Breathing in, I know that my lungs are still in good condition. I can enjoy breathing in. When you have a lung infection, you cannot enjoy much. But now you don't have a lung infection. It's possible for you to breathe in and enjoy your in-breath with the fresh air. Breathing in, I know that my feet are strong enough for me to walk and to run. Breathing in, I know that I have time in order to to walk slowly. I am not pressed to run. So there are so many conditions of happiness that are there, and when you go back to the here and the now, you recognize them. And that will make joy and happiness possible right away, at any time. So as a practitioner, we cannot say that, well, there is no joy, no happiness in my life. You cannot say that. You can say that, well, as a non-practitioner, I cannot get in touch with the conditions of happiness that are there. That is why I suffer. So with the practice of mindfulness and concentration, a practitioner can always generate, bring in a feeling of joy, a feeling of happiness. That is the art of happiness. When you walk from your tent to the meditation hall, why don't you enjoy every step? There are brothers and sisters, lay as well as monastic, they can do that. They become aware that their feet are strong enough, their lungs are healthy, and the air in Plumridge is fresh enough, so they enjoy their steps, their in-breath, and so on. So with every step, you create a feeling of joy, a feeling of happiness. Joy and happiness are now or never. We have to train ourselves to be joyful, to be happy. With our in-breath, our out-breath, our steps. And when you brush your teeth in the morning, enjoy brushing your teeth. When you are above 80, like in my condition, and if you still have teeth to brush in the morning, That's a wonder. So if I'm mindful, happiness comes right away. And when I do walking meditation, holding the hands of children, I'm very happy at this age. And yet I can do walking meditation, I can hold hands of children. We are walking in the kingdom of God. There's no doubt the kingdom is now or never. Happiness also. Happiness is now or never. Don't look for it in the future. As a good practitioner, you can be happy here and now because conditions are already enough for you to be happy. The French have a song. Why do you wait? Why don't you be happy right now? Qu'est-ce qu'on attend pour être heureux? So don't imagine happiness in the future elsewhere. The kingdom is right here. Happiness is possible here. With mindfulness of walking, breathing, sitting, you can create moments of happiness. The French writer André Gide say that God is happiness. I like that. God is happiness. And God is available 24 hours a day, he said. I also agree with that. And you can say that if God is available 20 hours a day, 24 hours a day, his kingdom is also available. So why don't you get in touch and be happy? Why look for happiness elsewhere and in the future? We already understand, now we should put it into practice. We have to make good use of our time here together and learn the art of happiness. And when suffering arises, we know how to handle, because we will learn the art how to suffer so that suffering becomes something very positive, very helpful to us. Because we know that suffering is crucial in creating happiness. The mud is essential for the growth of the lotus flowers. And the next two exercises proposed by the Buddha on mindful breathing is how to handle a painful feeling, a painful emotion. You know, the art of suffering. Breathing in, I'm aware of the painful feeling that has arisen in me. The first thing we do is to recognize it, to accept suffering as it is. Don't try to run away. Don't try to fight back. It's very helpful to say suffering is okay. You accept the mud in order for you to have a chance to grow lotus. So from now on, when every time a painful feeling arises, you should greet it friendly and say, okay, I know you are there. I would take good care of you. And we can say, suffering is okay. And if you can do that, you suffer less right away. You don't struggle anymore. Because you have the insight that happiness is made only of non-happiness element. Suffering also. Suffering is made of non-suffering element. If you don't know how to handle love, your love will become hate. So to learn how to handle love is an art. And when love becomes hate, don't despair. If you know how to handle hate, it becomes love again. Because love and hate are also organic matters. The garbage can be transformed back into flour, vegetable, cucumbers, tomatoes. So if you are not a practitioner, and then when a painful feeling, a painful emotion arises, we try our best to run away from it, to cover it up. We are afraid. But if we are a practitioner, we can generate the energy of mindfulness. And with that energy of mindfulness, we can greet our suffering. We say, hello there, my painful feeling, I know you down there. I will take good care of you. And if you know how to do that, you will not be afraid of suffering, even if it is a strong emotion. Many young people unable to handle a strong emotion go and commit suicide. In each country, there are young people who kill themselves every day. In France, it's about 30 people committing suicide every day because just they don't know how to handle a strong emotion like despair, anger. We have to learn that an emotion is just an emotion. It can be handled. An emotion that is something that arises, stay for some time, and finally will have to go away. Why do you have to die just because of one emotion? So learn the way of the Buddha. Be ready to welcome and to handle a strong emotion. Learn the practice of mindful breathing. When a strong emotion is coming, don't be afraid because you know how. Like when the storm is coming, there are things that we can do to prepare for the coming of the storm. We go and shut up all the windows. There are things that we can do to prepare for the storm to come. So this is a kind of storm inside. And when there are signs, symptoms of the storm, we have to stop everything and to prepare for its coming. Sit down or lay down and begin to breathe in mindfully. Do not stay on the level of your imagination and thinking. Bring your mind down to the abdomen and focus your attention on the rise and fall of your abdomen when you breathe in deeply and breathe out deeply. Do not think. It's not the time to think. The more you think, the stronger the emotion will come. Don't think, just focus your attention on the rise and fall of your abdomen. Just follow your in-breath from the beginning to the end without interruption. And that you have learned in the second exercise of mindful breathing. Breathing in, I follow my in-breath from the beginning to the end. So it's no time for thinking. Just recognizing the in-breath and out-breath. And if you breathe like that, you will survive the storm. Emotion stays during the time you breathe, and finally it will go away. It may last 5 minutes or 10 or 15 or 20, but if you know the art of breathing, abdomen breathing, belly breathing, deep breathing, and you are no longer afraid. We have to learn that every day, so that when the emotion comes, we will remember to practice. We don't need a friend to tell us. There's a monk in the apartment who is good in on computer, Brother Pháp Khởi, and I asked him to construct a kind of device called Eyekeeper. Every time you have a strong emotion, your eyekeeper will emit a sound of the bell because it knows when your heartbeat is not regular. When you are disturbed by a strong emotion, your eyekeeper will detect it and it will invite a sound of the bell for you to breathe, to stop everything and to put yourself in a position of sitting, and you practice mindful breathing. And if you know how to do that, if you master the art of belly breathing, you can stay firm during the time of the storm. And when the storm is gone, you say, well, the next time it comes, I will do the same. I'm no longer afraid. And you tell your little boy, little girl, and teach him or her to do it. In the beginning, you have to hold his hand and say, darling, breathe with daddy, breathe with mommy. Let us focus our attention on the rise and fall of our abdomen. You see, breathing in, my abdomen is rising. Breathing out, it's falling, rising, falling. So you channel that energy of mindfulness to your child. And mother and child breathing in together, breathing out together. You teach your child to do it. And if you are a school teacher, you may like to help to teach, to transmit that practice to your children. There are things that you can teach in school, how to relax, how to reduce the pain in the body, how to handle a strong, painful emotion. We have produced a book, Practicing Mindfulness with Children, Planting Seeds. And this is kind of manual that parents and school teachers can use in order to help the young people, because they are young, but they already suffer a lot. And if we master the practice, we can help the younger generation. And hopefully this applied ethics will be taught in every level of education, so that the young people have a chance to learn how to handle their suffering, their happiness. We teach them how to listen with compassion, how to get in touch with the suffering inside, outside, how to use loving speech and deep listening to reconnect with the people, restore communication. All these things can be taught in school. So if you are parents, if you are school teachers, please organize so that you have meetings to share as how to bring this kind of practice into school. It's very important. And we have begun to do that in many countries. There will be a course for school teachers in the European Institute of Applied Buddhism in Germany to train these school teachers in the practice so that they can transmit the knowledge and the practice to the students. And please do everything you can in order to help with this. And you have to produce more manuals of practice like this one for teenagers, for young adults, and so on. We need your helping hand. So the seventh one is to recognize. A painful feeling, a painful emotion. And the eighth is to release the tension, to embrace and to release the tension, to calm it down. This shows us that the Buddha is concerned about suffering and about happiness. And the fact that he put the practice of creating happiness before, it has a meaning. You need to be strong enough in order to handle the block of suffering in you. In a hospital, when a patient is too weak for a surgery, they don't make it right away. They keep him or her there, and they try to make him or her a little bit more resistant before surgery. So this is very much the same. We should be able to nourish us with moments of happiness and joy so that we be strong enough to handle the block of suffering inside, to get in touch. And in the Buddhist tradition, if you are a beginner in the practice, your mindfulness may not be strong enough for you to embrace your suffering. That is why you need the collective energy of the Sangha. You can borrow the collective energy of the Sangha. You sit among brothers and sisters in the practice and you say, "Dear Sangha, he's in my pain, he's my despair. I entrust that to you. Please help embrace it for me." It's like a drop of water in the river. Allow herself to be embraced and transported by the whole current. And that is why in Buddhism we practice taking refuge in the Sangha. The Sangha is a jewel. And as a good practitioner, you always think of building a Sangha in your hometown, so that you can profit and many people can profit from the Sangha, because the collective energy of the Sangha can be very healing and nourishing. Then I walk from my hut to the meditation hall. Or when I go to the dining hall, I practice walking meditation always. I like to invite you to do the same. From your tent, from your dorm, you apply the art of mindful walking. You arrive with each step. What is the use of coming to the meditation hall to meditate? Yes. But you don't need to wait until you arrive in order to meditate. As you make the first step, you can already begin the practice. Walk in such a way that each step brings you joy and happiness. That is a challenge. And there are those of us who know to do it, how to do it. Slow walking means that one step, one in-breath, and one step, one out-breath. In, I enjoy breathing in. Out, enjoy breathing out. Remember, with the insight that you are alive, there's a wonder to be alive and to be walking on this planet. Many of us walk like sleepwalkers. They don't enjoy, they don't treasure the time they spend on Earth. You want to make the most of our time on Earth. You want to enjoy everything. And mindfulness allowed us to do so. So feel the joy of touching the Earth with your foot. I have arrived. I am home. I don't want to run anymore. And with some mindfulness and concentration, your steps will become delightful, tasty. And when you are alone, try slow walking. Invest 100% of yourself into making one step. I have arrived. I'm aware of the contact between my foot and the ground. I do not think. I'm not carried away by the thinking. I'm right here, right now. I have arrived. I touch the earth. I am not running. I am home. My home is in the here and the now, where the kingdom is, where the Pure Land Buddha is. The kingdom of God, the Pure Land of Buddha, can be found only in the here and the now. You can find it out by yourself. You don't have to believe someone else. Don't have to believe Thay. You have to find out by yourself that the kingdom is there in the here and the now. And if you have not arrived 100%, don't make the other step. Stay there and breathe in again. Challenge yourself until you arrive 100% in the here and the now. You have the luxury to do that. You are here to do that. So breathe in and out until you are sure that you are arrived 100%. And then you smile, a smile of victory, and you make the second step. I am home. If you don't feel your true home in the here and the now, stay there until you arrive. And a few days of practice like that will transform our life. And when you walk with other people, you can walk normally. And you might like to begin with 3 steps, 5 steps. Arrive. While you breathe in, home. When you breathe out, because our out-breath is always a little bit longer than our in-breath. So you may choose, you might begin with 2 steps for your in-breath and 3 steps for your out-breath. And later on, you feel that this is not enough, this is not pleasant enough. And you add 1 more step to your in-breath and 2 more steps for your out-breath. And later on, if you feel that another step will make me happier, and then you add one more step while breathing in. And here you have 6, and if here is 5, is 8. And if it's 6, it's 9. Or 10, depends on you. And when you go to sleep, you may like to relax. And you listen to your clock, and you breathe in with 3 sounds. Second, and you breathe out with 5 seconds, and you enter gently into your sleep. Do not think. Just allow yourself to enjoy your in-breath and out-breath. And to practice walking meditation, is to enjoy walking in the kingdom of God. I do not deprive myself of that joy. Every day I enjoy walking, even if I walk at the airport or the railway station. So let us master the art of walking here. So when you go home, you bring it home and walk like a happy person, as a free person. A happy person. You are free from the past, from the future, from your anger, from your anxiety. Cultivating peace, happiness, living deeply in the here and the now. And after this Dhamma talk, when you hear the bell, please come. We invite the children to walk with us together. We make the kingdom of God available in the here and the now by our way of walking.